Our topic tonight is mindfulness, which is why I was asking you to notice what your experience of mindfulness is in the meditation. I've been asking everybody this week in all my classes, how do they experience presence and mindfulness? And it's very interesting and very helpful. But before I get going on that, I just like to offer a warm welcome to everybody here. I'm really grateful to be here 2 weeks in a row. It's making me feel more and more a part of your Sangha, and it warms my heart so much. So just a warm welcome to everybody. You know, we're joining tonight, we're joining together, and we're joining a stream. It's really more than a stream. It's like a river or a torrent of people that have been practicing mindfulness, practicing wisdom and compassion for, as Mary said, more than two millennia, more than a couple millennia, right? It's pretty amazing that we get to join that in our way here. No matter how humble your efforts are, that we are stepping into that flow, that community of people that are interested in the cultivation of wisdom and compassion. So there's probably all over the world right now, I know for a fact, there's all over the world right now, monks and nuns and lay people that are meditating right now, that are maybe studying the Dharma, are listening to Dharma talks. It's happening right now, and it's been happening for so long. So that you are part of the group of people that are developing the beautiful and the wholesome, these beautiful qualities and wholesome qualities like gratitude, which I offered at the end of the practice, but mindfulness in particular, which we'll be talking about tonight. So that community is here with us, even if they're not quite literally here with us, in maybe a more poetic sense, that community is here with us right here, cheering us on. And I like to think of that the trees and the sky and the rivers and the oceans are cheering us on too, right? It's to the benefit of the earth that we wake up together. So mindfulness. Mindfulness is a core aspect of the Buddhist teachings. And it's a practice that our particular lineage here at Marin Sangha, it's a practice that our particular lineage focuses on quite heavily. Mindfulness, as you probably know, many of you, is part of the Eightfold Path, and it also pops up in many, many of the lists. And in part, I mentioned that just to mention how pivotal or key or important this topic of mindfulness is. It's also mindfulness, I'm sure you know, is being studied scientifically here in the West, and that there are many, many, many studies and many, many places and ways to practice and learn about mindfulness. It's being disseminated far and wide. I think in part because it is so powerful, yes? So there's many definitions of mindfulness. It's something that people have written massive books on, that people spend their lives studying and practicing and teaching. So I'm going to give a few different ways to talk about it, a few different definitions, and then we can parse it out and unpack it. So mindfulness, this is from Wikipedia. Mindfulness is the practice of purposely bringing one's attention to the present moment experience without evaluation. That's interesting. So we could do that right now as I'm talking, as you're listening. Mindfulness is the practice of purposefully bringing your attention to what's happening right now. And it's a skill that is developed. It's something that we all know how to do or can do, but we can also develop. It's a skill that's developed through meditation in particular, but also through other practices. For instance, yoga or Tai Chi or Qigong. And I'm sure there's other practices. I think for me, I play music some, and I think mindfulness can be developed. It can be developed through any human endeavor, really. But in particular through our meditation. The word mindfulness, the word that got translated as mindfulness is sati in Pali, S-A-T-I. And it's significant, this word, this concept, this practice is a significant element of both Hindu and Buddhist traditions. Definitions of mindfulness are wide-ranging, And in fact, they're context specific. I mean, everything's context specific, isn't it? Everything is. I'm context specific. So are you probably. So the word sati and smriti in Sanskrit, sati in Pali, it literally means memory or retention. It's commonly translated as mindfulness, and it means to remember, to observe. It has this connotation of to remember, and that's predating the Buddha, really, this word smriti is to remember, to recollect what's important, what we're doing. And in some ways, when we sit down, we're remembering the present moment, right? In our meditation, right, we're remembering the present moment. We're practicing that so that it can serve us or support us in our daily life. It has a related meanings of calling to mind the wholesome. And I've started using the word beautiful too. So not just wholesome, but wholesome and beautiful dhammas, such as the four foundations or four establishments of mindfulness, the five faculties, the five powers is the listing situation. I hope your mind is okay with lists. If not, you can just let it go through. The seven awakening factors, which we explored in the meditation, actually, the seven awakening or factors of awakening. Anyway, so the dhammas, and we could talk about the quality, the beautiful or wholesome quality of mindfulness as a part of the Eightfold Path as our practice. So the scientific method has tried to parse out and simplify a definition of mindfulness. The scientific method has tried to parse out and simplify the technique of mindfulness. But the fact is, I mean, and it's done for a reason, so that the science can study the benefits of mindfulness. And as we know, I mean, I'm assuming that you know there's benefits because here you are on the Zoom call on a Sunday night, right? So here we are. And so the scientific method is trying to parse it out, pull it out so that it can be studied so that we can understand more deeply in some ways. But in fact, that's a little bit of, it's a disservice to the power of mindfulness, because mindfulness arises with a whole group of friends of these beautiful or wholesome qualities. So mindfulness is more complex and nuanced than maybe gets taught sometimes in secular, although I think a lot of secular mindfulness teachers are doing a great job, but as when it's getting studied. We have in the text many different references to sampajaya. Do you know this word, sampajaya? It means it's a clear comprehension or introspection, a clear comprehension. It's sort of like what we're doing. It's the mental process by which one continuously monitors one's body and mind. And it's referenced a lot in conjunction with mindfulness. They're like good friends. They come together. They're holding hands or something. They come together. It's been variously translated into English as continuity, clear comprehension, clear knowing, fully alert, full awareness, attention, consideration, discrimination, comprehension, circumspection, and introspection. That's a lot of words. So I have a story. This is from Philip Moffat. I think he's one of your founding teachers in this group, actually, if not the founding teacher. So Philip Moffat gave this teaching to me, to all of us that were in the room at a meditation retreat about clear comprehension. He was saying that we can be mindful of the very details of what's happening, but without clear comprehension, we won't necessarily know. We could get lost in the details. So say you go to a gas station, say you just came off a retreat and you've been on retreat for, I don't know, like 7 days or 10 days or 2 months or something, or however long, maybe even just one day. And you are driving home and you need to stop for gas, and you stop for gas and you're paying attention, very present to every little thing, opening the car door, stepping the foot out of the car, standing up, closing the door, right? And you've lost a little bit of clear comprehension, which is the context, which is you're at a gas station. And so maybe a broader view of attention. Does that make sense to you? I feel like he did a better job of explaining that story, right? But like this clear comprehension understands the context for the mindfulness and helps us discern what's the most appropriate or wise way to practice in that particular moment. So it helps us with the context. Because mindfulness is not actually ever any one thing. It's going to show up in different ways because the moment is always changing and different and always, the moment is always changing and different. So mindfulness is a beautiful quality. It's a wholesome quality that arises in relationship to our in relationship to other beautiful qualities. So we have the seven factors of awakening. Now I did give a talk to this group on the seven factors of awakening earlier in the year. These qualities are mindfulness. So this mindfulness is considered to be the balancing quality. Like there's like a seesaw, mindfulness is in the middle and it balances. On one side, we have the activating qualities of investigation. So in our meditation practice tonight, we did investigate, like, what does mindfulness feel like? Notice your effort. That's an investigation, right? This quality of bringing this curious attention to what's going on. There's a teaching metaphor from the suttas that talks about mindfulness as being like a surgeon's probe, a surgeon's touch to figure out what's needed, right? That quality of curiosity and investigation is embedded in mindfulness. We can pull them apart in these seven factors of awakening. We can say mindfulness is this non-judgmental paying attention on purpose to the present moment, but it actually has embedded in it, like sugar has sweet in it. It has embedded in it this quality of curiosity, investigation. And then we also have embedded in mindfulness, we have this quality of effort or energy. It takes energy to be present. Have you noticed? It does, right? It does. I was talking to someone today, a friend of mine, and we were talking about this sort of predominant habit patterns that show up when we meditate. Like for me, my predominant habit pattern when I meditate is self-doubt. And then for my husband, his predominant habit pattern. I mean, everything shows up when we meditate. The whole world shows up when we meditate. But often each of us will have predominant habit patterns. For my husband, his is sleepiness. And someone last week, I was teaching a meditation class actually on Friday. And he said his predominant thing is anger and irritation. And then my friend was saying today that her predominant thing in meditation is just kind of going into fantasy, like just thinking about things that are fun to think about. I thought that sounded nice. I want that one. Anyway, like they're all actually kind of painful. Actually, don't be fooled. They're all actually painful. But at any rate, and I was thinking about that, like that tendency to go into fantasy. Like sometimes it takes some effort to come away from that, right? Like our meditation takes some effort to come away from sometimes, or maybe like to come away from the doubt or anyway. So that we have mindfulness is this beautiful, wholesome quality, right? That part of mindfulness or part of the mindfulness family is investigation or curiosity or interest. And then the next one of these seven factors that are the rising energy is the effort. And then the next one is piti or joy. That's why I was having you have your eyes smile in the meditation. I wonder how that was for you. Like a little, just it can be subtle. Sometimes we hear this rapture, this word rapture or joy, and we're like, oh, I don't have that. Maybe you have it, but it could be very subtle, just like this little, like a little tingly maybe sometimes, or a little smile on your eyes, a little smile, right? Like this quality of mindfulness. Remember, these are beautiful, beautiful, wholesome qualities that we're cultivating. And then on the other side, so mindfulness is like the triangle in the middle, and we have the teeter-totter. And on this side, the going up side, we have the investigation energy on joy. And on the other side, the going down side, we have tranquility. So this is stillness, this quality of stillness. I like to feel it in my butt, my sits bones down there. Maybe you feel it in your hands or a kind of stillness. And then concentration, that focusing the mind, that steady focus of the mind. And then equanimity, the kind of spacious, the spaciousness that knows that things go up and down. So these seven factors of awakening could be looked at as aspects of mindfulness that arise depending on the circumstance, and that our clear comprehension can help us know and see what's happening, what's going on. So earlier this year when I gave the talk, I'm sure not all of you were here, and it's been months anyway, so I was talking about these seven factors, and I was talking about actually how our practice, our spiritual practice is not, it's not this like chipping away at the rock face of our problems. But we might have that idea sometimes like, oh, I'm going to come to meditation. I'm going to fix myself and then I'm going to fix the world. And that's actually a misunderstanding of what we're doing. We're not chipping away at the rock face of our problems and our neuroses. We're actually cultivating the wholesome and the beautiful. So you could say we're letting go of the preoccupation, with what is not working. So we're cultivating these qualities. Each time we sit down to meditate, we're cultivating patience too. I mean, patience isn't on this list, but I mean, there's so many other wholesome, beautiful qualities that arise through our practice, and that we're cultivating them by turning the attention toward them, towards them, and we're letting go of that preoccupation of what's not working. And then last week, when I was here with you, I was talking about this embodiment. Like, what is it actually to be? What is your experience of mindfulness? Like, how is presence for you? What is that embodiment? So it's not just an idea in your mind, right? It's an actual felt sense. So you know for yourself, and you don't have to always listen to a Dharma talk, because you know for you, although listening to Dharma talks actually is pretty fabulous and helpful, but you start to take these ideas in and practice with them, and you have your own experience. I am particularly interested tonight in your experience of mindfulness. And that is a foreshadowing of a discussion question that is coming. Like, what is your experience of mindfulness? What is your embodied experience? So the body is always in the present moment, and it is a resource. I think Corey was talking about last week, that sense of his back body supporting him in his practice. I thought that was a really beautiful sharing. And the body's always in the present. The body doesn't lie. And the body is embedded within and not separate from the broader system that we are all, that we live in. The body reflects the deeper teachings of dukkha, anatta, and anicca, of things aren't perfect. Have you noticed? Things aren't perfect, in fact. And that it's not so personal, it's this human condition, and that everything is changing, it's impermanent. We can see the Four Noble Truths playing out in our body. And without your body, you would not have a life. Oh, the other thing I took from last week's talk was from Deborah, that thank you for caring, right? Like that thing, saying to your body, thank you for carrying me this far. Thank you for carrying me this far. Oh, that was really a great teaching for me. So I am interested in your embodied sense of mindfulness. So from UC Berkeley, mindfulness means maintaining a moment by moment awareness of our thoughts, our feelings, our body sensations, and surrounding environment through a gentle, nurturing lens. Ah, that's a big mouthful. So mindfulness means maintaining a moment by moment awareness of our thoughts, feelings, body sensations, and surrounding environment through a gentle, nurturing lens. So I was thinking, like, for me, one of the ways I experience mindfulness is when I can get, maybe you can too, like a kind of mental preoccupation, where there's like a mental preoccupation and I lose contact with a lot of other things, what's going on around me. Sometimes if it gets really intense, like that mental preoccupation. And when presence is here, there's a sense of the grip of the mental preoccupation releasing. And then I can feel my feet on the ground and I can notice that there's people around me or sights or sounds. So that for me, mindfulness or presence has a sense of spaciousness, right? The gripping lets go. So it's kind of like a spacious feeling. Sometimes it feels like that, not always. From the UCLA Mark Center, it's a mindfulness center. UCLA says mindfulness can be defined as paying attention to present moment experiences with openness, curiosity, and a willingness to be with what is. So these are actually really beautiful definitions, aren't they? Mindfulness can be defined as paying attention to present moment experiences with openness, curiosity, and a willingness to be with what is. So all these definitions are pointing us again and again back into the present moment. So our true home is not in the past. Our true home is not in the future. Our true home is right here in the here and now. And sometimes that takes courage, because sometimes the here and now is hard. It's challenging. It can be at times. But in my experience, the present moment, the immediacy of the now, which is already past again and again and again, because it's undefinable, unmeasurable. But the present moment is always pretty doable. In fact, I've done 52 years and some months of present moment experiences, right? Like it keeps, right? Like there it is. The present moment, my mind might say, oh my God, I can't bear this. I can't do this 1 second longer. And then the next second happens and I'm still here. And that's not to discount how challenging the present moment can be, yes. But when we break it down into just this moment, it becomes a lot more doable. So our true home, it's not in the past with how it used to be. Our true home is not in the future, how we're going to be after we do a whole bunch more meditation. Our true home is right here in the present moment. So mindfulness is not about getting better and better. It's a little bit of a paradox or a conundrum. It's not about getting better and better. It's so that you don't miss your life. We lose touch. Sometimes we lose touch with our actual life, waiting for some future state. Or we lose touch with our actual life, reminiscing about the past. And so we can do this with our meditation practice too. We're waiting for some perfect time when the practice is good enough, when we've got something better, when we've gone somewhere other than just where we are. But life happens right here. Right here. Some of the yoga traditions, I know this isn't a yoga group, but I think this is really interesting. Some of the yoga traditions talk about the present moment, our presence is being very full, right? Like the fullness of this moment. And if I were to stop for a moment, we could tune into that. Oh, like this moment, it includes the mood, it includes the thoughts, but it includes the sound and the light and the temperature. It's full. The thusness, the suchness, this moment. All these techniques, right? Like these mindfulness techniques and these seven factors of awakening, they're pointing us back. They're like gentle little guides pointing us back, bringing us back into the fullness, the suchness of just right here. The practices of mindfulness allow us to come into deeper contact with life. They allow us to come into deeper intimacy with life. Can we wake up in our lives, the life that we already have, with the body that we already have, with the heart that we already have? So mindfulness meditation, it does not require, in fact, it's a complete misunderstanding. It doesn't require that we get to some perfect state where the mind is blank and all of our troubles will somehow disappear, right? That's not mindfulness meditation. We might long for a blank mind, in part because our thoughts can sometimes be quite torturous and painful. We can be tormented by unwholesome mind states. But our mindfulness meditation doesn't require that we get to some blank state. It actually is an invitation into the fullness of what's here, that our life is only available in the here and now. So from Thich Nhat Hanh, he said, the opposite of forgetfulness is mindfulness. Oh, that's really interesting, right? Like that's pointing us back to that word sati, which means to remember. So Thich Nhat Hanh, the opposite of forgetfulness is mindfulness. Mindfulness is when you are truly there, mind and body together. You breathe in and out mindfully. You bring your mind back to your body and you are there. And we can all do that right now. You breathe in and out mindfully. Bring your mind back to your body and you are there. When your mind is there with your body, you are established in the present moment. Okay, that sounds like embodiment. That's what I talked about last week, right? When your mind is there with your body, you are established in the present moment. So that's beautiful, right? That's embodiment, that's presence. So mindfulness and clear comprehension, they are considered to be an inner wealth, a true wealth, right? Mindfulness can be practiced, as you know, I'm sure you all know this, it can be practiced in meditation, but it also shows up in our daily lives. It can show up when we're playing music. It can show up when we're washing dishes. It can show up when we're brushing our teeth. It is a beautiful quality that can, in fact, shift your life in many, many ways for the better. In some ways, you could consider that we practice mindfulness in order to build the skill of presence so that we can rely on it as a good friend when things are difficult. And then that could be another discussion question, which I don't know that we'll have time for tonight, but it's a good one too. When is a time, it would be inspiring actually to hear, when is a time that mindfulness was like a good friend for you? When was it a time that it really supported you through a difficult experience? So when my husband's mother died some years ago at this point, we flew, his dad, they
moms and didn't pick up the car and see.
Uh-oh, somebody's unmuted. Okay. So when my husband's father, mother died some years ago, we flew to Colorado to be with his father. And his father was it was a really difficult situation. I will not go into the details. You can just, not my story to tell, but you can just imagine that it was a really difficult situation and there was a lot of suffering and a lot of it was difficult. And mindfulness, I was like, at the time, I was so grateful that I had been practicing meditation for some time. I was like, I was, instead of doing bicep curls every day, I had been doing this again and again, coming back to the present moment. And it was really, it was such a good friend for me at that time. So my question for you is, what does being established in awareness, in presence, in mindfulness feel like to you? So mindfulness shows up in different ways, and it depends on the circumstance and the conditions. And so there's not really a wrong answer. You might think, oh, I can't answer that question. What if I say the wrong thing? What if it shows up in a way that's not really how it is? But that's not true. It shows up in many different ways depending on the circumstance. So mindfulness, it can show up as a kind of focus, right? Like sometimes I was asking somebody this week this question, and she was talking about how it helps her like actually focus on the present moment, that that her tendency was to just kind of be not present, like not really there in her life, kind of halfway there all the time. And then mindfulness actually helped her be focused and more concrete. And is it focus one of those seven factors of awakening? Isn't it? It is, right? Like that focus, the samadhi, the concentration. And then it can show up very spacious, right? Like very open and non-judgmental. And that's equanimity. That's another one of those mindfulness friends in that list of seven, that equanimity. And sometimes it can show up, right, as investigation. Like maybe you have an emotional storm happening through your body, in your heart, in your mind. And so that quality of investigation or curiosity, mindfulness shows up, and that's how you experience it. And that's another one of those seven, right? Like it shows up in so many different ways. So mindfulness has an aspect of focus. I'll go back to that one. Sometimes I like to cook dinner sometimes, and I'll be like cooking my tofu. You know, I like to fry my tofu, cook my tofu, and like I'll get a text or something, and I pick up my phone and I lose my focus on the tofu. And next thing you know, the tofu's burnt, right? Like mindfulness left me, right? Focus left me, and I burned the tofu, right? So mindfulness, it has in it a kind of focus. It's remembering what I'm doing. I pick up the phone and I lose that memory, that remembering what's going on, that clear comprehension, that memory, and go down a different road, and the tofu gets burned and dinner is ruined. That's a true story. Sometimes our mindfulness is spacious, like I was saying, and very open, and other times it's very precise and detailed about the smallest little things, right? It can be very little precise. Sometimes our mindfulness shows up as a kind of protection, as a kind of guarding. So there's a very classic cliche story about writing an email, tapping it out, writing an email. And I'm irritated at someone, and I'm writing an email, and then there's a moment of mindfulness, and I remember to not press send when I'm really upset and mad. And there's a moment of mindfulness, and it protects me, and it protects the other person, right? It's a protection. It's really a wonderful protection. Okay, so I want to finish just shortly because I have more to say, but I want to hear what you all have to say because I learned so much. So mindfulness is a quality of attention that is so big and open-hearted and spacious that it sees the good, the bad, the ugly. It sees mindfulness as a quality of attention that is so big, so open-hearted that it sees all of the human condition without getting caught or imprisoned. So I have a little poem to end. This is by Wendell Berry. It's called What We Need Is Here. Geese appear high over us, pass, and the sky closes. Abandon, as in love or sleep, holds them to their way clear in the ancient faith. What we need is here, and we pray not for new earth or heaven, but to be quiet in heart and in eye, clear. What we need is here. I'm going to read that again. Geese appear high over us, pass, and the sky closes. Abandon, as in love or sleep, holds them to their way, clear in the ancient faith. What we need is here. And we pray not for a new earth or heaven, but to be quiet in heart and in eye clear. What we need is here. All right, my friends. So my question, if anybody was so bold as to be willing to share, how do you experience mindfulness? How do you, or the other question actually is really good too, is when has mindfulness been a good friend for you? Yeah, Mary, please.
It's interesting because sometimes I feel like I have different levels of mindfulness. Like it doesn't always feel the same. Sometimes it feels like I feel like I have like a shallow mindfulness, you know? And then sometimes I feel like I can have a really deep mindfulness. And when for me, it's the six sense gates. Being present for them and what's coming in. And knowing that I know what's happening. So there's like a knowing too. But for it to really be, more profound, there has to be a very open heart. So it's kind of like this, like the whole chitta thing is going on is real, feels it, the heart space has to feel really open. And so for me, mindfulness is being present for what's going on, knowing that I am. And when my heart is open, there's a way that I can just be with it without, I think you had mentioned, with there's no evaluation. I can just be with it without extrapolating, that I can just be there. And that place of mindfulness is a real refuge for me.
Thank you. I love that you're bringing up that there's different levels or different ways, like, because it's going to be different in different circumstance. So I love that. And then also that you're really bringing out that open-heartedness aspect of it. Like that, open-heartedness, that you brought that out so clearly. Thank you. That's beautiful. Yeah, Barbara.
Yeah, I just want to pass along my favorite phrase of Phillips, because I think part of me is having this intention when I become mindful, which is fully receiving an experience. And that means that what everything Mary was talking about, that open heart, encompassing it, really being open and letting it penetrate me. You know, and it's on all levels when I can.
Oops. Sorry. Thank you. Fully receiving. And then you're pointing out like the vividness. I don't know if any of you have sat retreat and feel like things become so vivid by the end of retreat, right? Because we're fully receiving. We're intimate. It's beautiful. Thank you, Barbara. Who else? Anybody else? We have time. Oh, Deborah, was that your hand? I can't tell.
Thank you. Your talks always make my heart smile, and it also reminded me of a reading I got a day or two ago from Rick Hansen talking about rushing. So mindfulness for me is this joyful waking up to what mishigas is going on in my head that doesn't need to be there, taking up my energy and my real estate and my brain, what's left of it. And I'm always burning my tofu, except for me, it's usually toast or eggs, pasture-raised organic eggs. So mindfulness for me is this joyful place of waking up and realizing what I'm doing and then making a choice to, you know, just be enjoying the songbird of this couple of this little mated pair outside my window, or feeling the air on my skin, or just feeling my heartbeat. So, and also remembering, you use the word remembering, what my aspirations are, what my intentions are. So it's a very joyful thing, because it's like, oh my God, I have this opportunity to stop being a schmuck. So it's really lovely. Thank you.
Thank you. I love how you're bringing out the joyful, right? That's one of the seven factors. That's the joy, the PT, right? Like that joyful, that's beautiful. And then you said this really key thing, right? Like that joyful presence, and then you have a choice, right? Mindfulness gives us more choice. It's a very powerful place to be seated right in the middle and have choice. It's beautiful. Anybody else?
Yeah.
Robert, let's do Robert and then Vivian.
Hi. I had to laugh because when you mentioned what mindfulness is not, you know, sitting there sort of cataloging our problems and chipping away at our neuroses, I was like, yes, that's exactly what I'm doing. So much so that what you said mindfulness was in that same sentence just blew right past me. Fortunately, I was able to kind of laugh and drop back to, okay, it's like this right now. And it's been a really challenging 24 hours and, you know, kind of cut yourself a break. But what did you say mindfulness was?
So it's not like you caught that, not chipping away at the rock face of our problems. It's actually the willingness to let go of those preoccupations and cultivate these wholesome, beautiful qualities. Thanks. So mindfulness is the cultivation of these beautiful qualities, but we have to be willing to let go sometimes.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, thank you. And then Vivian, what did you have for us?
Well, first I need to say that I identify with Deborah's mention of mishigas. I know that well. And I think the most, I want to put a label on the mindfulness, but I don't even know what the right word is, so I won't. But I've had a couple of experiences that really stay with me, although are not easily replicable. And that is a sense of joy and peace. And I've had that experience both in formal meditation, where for whatever's a long time for me, no distractions. Such joy to feel that. And the other time I've had it happen is washing the dishes. I just decide to look. I don't know how I do it. I look at every single fork, spoon, sponge squeeze, every feel of the water, every little detail of washing the dishes. And by the time I'm done, throw anything at me. I'm just so joyful and so peaceful. So that's my best story. My best story of mine.
Thank you. Yeah. Beautiful. That's really beautiful, because you're bringing in that it doesn't have to be on the meditation cushion. In fact, doing dishes, right? Like these practices are meant to be part of our life. So thank you for bringing that in. That's a beautiful story for us.